Hey everybody, and welcome to Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with...
Kogar the Gorilla.
A.K.A.
Paul Prezenza, known as the Moo Cow.
Moo.
Help.
And I'm also with...
Jess Chen.
Okay.
The normal one.
The normal one.
Yes.
Is there such a thing in this?
You know? Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, well...
Comparatively, how about that?
Anyway, we're going to be talking about...
Rhett Fink a Boo Boo!
This was Paul's pick, so we're going to talk about it soon, right after this, mood music.
Yay!
All right, we're back. And like I said, this was Paul's pick. So, yep. Paul, introduce
it. Alrighty. So, I'm just going to start off by saying Rhett Fink a Boo Boo is one of my favorite movies of all time. This is a 1966 movie directed by Ray Dennis Steckler, who's one of my favorite directors of all time. And he made this with his wife, or at least wife at the time, Carolyn Brandt. She plays C.B. Beaumont. Lonnie Lord is played by Ron Haydock of Ron Haydock and the Boppers, and there's a few other folks in there too. And it's just this really fun, wacky movie that starts off in a very serious vein. It looks like it's going to be sort of this, I want to say typical crime drama, but a crime drama of its time. In the 60s, and then all of a sudden, it totally shifts into something completely different.
Definitely.
It's a very jarring, sudden kind of a shift, but...
Just, like, beats you upside the head with
it. Oh, yeah, it's great. Ooh. It's so much fun.
Beats you upside the head.
So,
it's like Rhett Fink beats everybody upside the head.
So there's a lot to talk about. So Ray Dennis Steckler... He is a guy who is kind of a contemporary of Ed Wood. When Ed Wood was making his most famous movies in the 50s, Ray Dennis Steckler was in the Army. He was a photographer, and I believe he actually went to Korea for a year. But that was his thing, is he was taking pictures. So he understands photography, he understands cinematography, he understands just how to frame shots. So in his movies, they're always well shot, and he knows cinematography very, very well. As a matter of fact, he has trained several award-winning cinematographers through the years, including Laszlos Kovacs, who did Easy Rider and Five Easy Pieces and a few other movies, and Vilmos Zsigmond, who did Deliverance, and he won the Oscar for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Yeah, he's kind of the real deal. And supposedly, from what I have read, Hollywood was rediscovering Ray Dennis Steckler and wanted to get him back in. He was in, starting in the late 50s and early 60s, he was actually in the Hollywood system. He started off as the photographer. He ended up doing some other stuff, director of photography. He was assistant cameraman. Unfortunately, according to him, because I actually got to interview him about 6 months before he died back in 2009, he said that he was working on an Alfred Hitchcock film, and he ended up accidentally knocking an A-frame that almost hit Alfred Hitchcock, and so he actually had to come out and say, I want that guy off the set, and he ended up getting fired. And that was kind of the end of his A-level career, but he always wanted to make movies, so he went off in his own way. From there, From there, he ended up getting involved with Arch Hall Sr. with Fairway Pictures. He started off as a cinematographer. He also did some acting. His directorial debut was with Wild Guitar, which, of course, is Arch Hall Jr. That's right after EGA. He was in EGA. He was one of the cinematographers for that. And at that point is when he took on his sort of nom de plume as the Cash Flag, because he wanted to make sure that, you know, he wasn't going to get, you know, that whole thing with Alfred Hitchcock wasn't going to follow him around. And he famously did the 1963 Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Became Mixed Up Zombies. I forget the whole title, but
it's
a long
bizarre.
One. Yeah. Which he dubbed the first monster musical. There's a lot of stuff that he ends up working with music. He's one of the pioneers of videos music videos. And there's a lot of that in this particular film, which is really, really cool. And you can see the influences from Richard Lester and Help and Hard Day's Night and how that all kind of evolves later into a thing with MTV and all that. So he followed a similar career path with Ed Wood in that he had this one decade in the 60s where he was doing all this great stuff. He actually made some really, really good movies. Thrill Killers is a movie that I would put on our list of forgotten horror classics. It's actually an excellent film. By the time he got into his 70s, the whole drive-in theater thing was kind of drying up. And like other independent filmmakers, he had to get into sort of more of the adult films because that was what people were paying for. So a lot of the 70s, late 70s and early 80s, he was doing that. In addition to that, he opened up a video store because he had moved to Las Vegas by then, and called Mascot Video, which is where I met him. He actually sold it in 1995, but he still showed up there and because he loved movies. And that's where I ended up meeting him. And he had a whole wall dedicated to him. It was great.
Of course.
All his films are there. So I got to talk to him. He got autographed all kinds of stuff for me. He was just a really, really nice guy. Very, very cool. And he's very, very independent, wants to do things his way. And he's kind of a family guy, He has his own little group of people that he works with. So I guess we can talk a little bit about that. Carolyn Brandt, his wife, is the lead in this. She plays C.B. Beaumont. She was in most of his movies up into the early 70s when they were together. And then after they divorced, she was still friendly with him and ended up appearing in several other films. She did not want to get into the adult stuff, so that sort of ended there. But she was in most of his movies. Ron Haydock ended up being in 5 Ray Dennis Steckler films. Titus Moody, who ended up playing Titus the Gardener and Boo Boo. He was in a lot of stuff. He was in TV series. He was in Twilight Zone. He was in a show called Combat. And he was in a couple of movies that are considered cult classics. One of them is Outlaw Motorcycles and then the Last American Hobo. Yeah, he was in a bunch of stuff. Benji, who's the black gentleman who was he was Ray Dennis Steckler's best man when he got married. He was in 3 Ray Dennis Steckler movies. He was also in a number of other things. George Caldwell played Link, who's the guy with the creepy smile and the chains.
Oh.
He was in 2 Ray Dennis Steckler movies, and he was on a number of things on TV. He was on Charlie's Angels and Wonder Woman, and he ended up getting involved in community theater, and he was a director of theater as well. He actually did a lot of stuff.
Nice.
And I think in that interview, Ray Dennis Steckler talks about how he was actually with Mama Cass when Mama Cass died. So he was kind of involved with that group of folks.
That's right.
And then Mike Cannon was Hammer, the guy with the hammer. He was in 4 Ray Dennis Steckler films.
Wait. So the guy who had a hammer the whole time?
That was his nickname,
was the Hammer?
Yep, Hammer.
So was that did Ray Dennis Steckler give that to him?
Yeah, no. Those were the characters, Hammer, Link, and Benji.
Was Benji the one with the teeth and the...
No, Benji. Yeah. Benji was the African-American guy.
Okay, and then the other guy, the creepy guy with
Link,
the chain. Okay.
Right. So,
chain Link.
Right, so Mike Cannon,
there you go.
In addition to 4 Ray Dennis Steckler movies, was also in a couple of biker movies. He was in one, it was Hell's Chosen Few, is like the one that most people know of. So he had this sort of family atmosphere, these folks that he liked to work with. And these were people who, they didn't mind not making, thousands of dollars because, Ray Dennis Steckler didn't have that much money. But, the whole idea of sort of making movies all the time with your friends in your backyard sometimes and just creating films was something that
Literally.
He really wanted to do. And that's what he did, So, yeah, so that's why he has all these great stories and great, great times to talk about. So, yeah, it's definitely got a very 60s feel to it.
Yeah.
It came on, right around the same time as the original Batman TV show, so there's a lot of similarities there. And then, I think I mentioned the whole music video thing. There's music videos sort of encased within the film. And he's the guy who directed the 1969 original Jefferson Airplane White Rabbit with his wife at the time, Carolyn Brandt, dancing on the same rocks that they show at the end of Ratfinka Boo Boo, which is pretty cool. And there's all kinds of stuff. There's just, you know, this movie's just loaded with lore, especially from independent filmmakers of that era, that the late 50s, early 60s. And it was just a lot of fun. You know, everyone I show this to just enjoys it.
It definitely had a lot of fun. Like, it was not a, I guess it was not a too serious of a film. Like, it knows what it is.
It started it off as.
No, I don't think so. I mean, kind of, I guess, with the attack of the woman in the beginning.
Right.
I don't, like, I mean, I guess, but still, even then, I was, like, going, okay, this is a little silly. Like, you know, I still thought she could escape the way that, you know, they were having it, but. Yeah.
Well, you're thinking of modern terms, not in 60s movies.
Right.
Yeah, true.
What did you think, Jen?
Well, it's like we watched two different movies that got mashed together.
Right.
And the jump from one to the other was more than jarring for me. It hurt. But, because I feel like the first part of the movie, the serious part, should have been finished. Like, it could have been a great 60s movie if it was finished. The second part would have been hilarious if we had some introduction to it.
Right.
So, like, if they were made as two separate movies, each of them could have been great. When they mashed together, it hurts.
But to me, that's where the genius lies, because, you know, he listened to that little voice that said, wouldn't it be funny if this happened? And instead of ignoring it, he went with it and said, okay, let's change it up. Let's have some fun.
But there's no build-up or introduction to the second part. Like, I mean, these characters come out of nowhere.
Out of a closet.
And that kind of...
Literally, they come out of the closet.
They come out of the closet. Well, at least they try to. They get stuck.
They get stuck in the closet for a little bit.
Help me, Titus. Wait, I'm charging my battery.
Now, here's the thing. I agree with Jen that it should have had some introduction. Here's the thing with that. Okay. Is like that if they had like a scene, you know, like, because it's obviously very reminiscent of Batman.
Right.
Of the 60s Batman. Burt Ward, Adam West, you know,
classic
Batman.
Prime.
Right. And I think even one part somebody actually says pow,
right,
you know, or whatever in the movie. Obviously is very much reminiscent of that. Like, it was a very much an homage to it and inspired by it. So what you would want to do is you'd want to set up these characters where you would get to meet them. You get to see that they are like the Ratfink and Boo Boo are like friends who know each other, who, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Who have, you know, because when he just shows up, they just go, all right, you know, let's go to the closet, you know, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't actually, you know, there's no talk with the commissioner beforehand like Batman does.
And I get it. And I kind of like the jarring of the two-movie effect, because if it had been too serious, you're right, it would have been a decent film. It would have been a good film, but it wouldn't be nearly as much fun. And if it had been really, really silly and crazy, I think it would have been the Monkees TV show, which also came out around that time. This kind of walked the line. It kind of had elements of both. And there's lots of really good stuff in there. I mean, lots of the cinematography is good.
Mm-hmm.
I like the changing colors that they used. I thought that made it really cool. You can see the whole thing in black and white, too. It's not going to hurt, but I think the color changes made it pretty more interesting, a little bit more interesting.
Isn't that something that they also did in the early silent movies to denote whether it was nighttime, daytime,
right.
Like that? Okay.
They did. And they also experimented a lot with color in the 60s as well.
Okay.
I remember, in fact, Vampire Man of the Lost Planet. There's a part where they just inexplicably change the tint of the film back and forth. And they try to say that this is part of the atmospheric condition on this planet, when really somebody's just changing the gels on the lights and they're just, you know, trying to please the kids. Yeah. But that's actually a few years down the road.
Meaning Paul.
Yeah, well, the drive-in crowd, put that way. But yeah, so this is just, you know, it's just one of my favorite films. I really like Ray Dennis Deckler in general. all his movies are very interesting. He can't help himself sometimes. He likes to put in goofy sound effects or just goofy little things that happen. I love the fact that he's willing to share his home movie vault and just take stuff out. Like, you know, he'll share this party where his dad is dancing around the barbecue, or he's got his daughters there, you know, at the beach party, or you know, they crash the parade and they put their themselves in there as if they're part of the parade, oh, and people God. Are looking at them like, oh, what the hell? You know, it's just a lot of fun. It's just neat. Now, we haven't really talked or touched much on the plot. The plot itself is pretty darn simple. Yeah. You know, you've got these, the movie opens up with this woman. She's sort of walking home or walking somewhere in the street in North Hollywood.
Lighting up a cigarette.
And she gets accosted by these three gang guys, one of which has a hammer, one of which has a length of chain, and the other guy is the giggler. We used to call him Giggles. And
he's got a creepy giggle.
He's perfected the creepy giggle. Absolutely. But unlike the lighthearted kind of fisticuffs later, these guys, they knock her off and grab her purse and practically choke her to death. And that is very serious. And they physically assault her and then leave her there. And she ends up screaming. And then it sort of morphs into the rest of the picture.
It still hasn't hit the crazy part yet,
though. No. No. But it's the most serious part of the film.
Yeah.
Then after the credits come, then you're introduced to Lonnie Lord, who's played by Ron Haydock. He's this rock and roll guy who carries his guitar everywhere because, as the narrator says,
Lonnie will sing a song anytime, anywhere. Lonnie likes to sing.
Which leads us into our first video, music video, where he starts singing this really cool boppy tune. And there's Carolyn Brandt popping in as the girlfriend. She's dancing around. And it's, you know, you get set into their whole lives. Their the boyfriend, girlfriend going to the party thing. And then that's when the three no-goodniks from the first part of the film come back and they're looking for something to do, so they get a phone book, and out of nowhere, they just randomly pick a number, and they're going to torment this person, and it turns out to be CB, so they start calling her up and tormenting her, and then they ended up kidnapping her to hold her for ransom, and then it becomes a big chase thing.
How do they know that Lonnie Lord and CB were dating?
I don't think they learned that. They knew that at first. I think it was after, because remember, they follow her around for a while?
Yeah.
And they kind of stalk her and they kind of haunt her. I think they pick that up.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't show it enough. Like, I had no idea. I was like, wait, they knew that he... And how did they think, like, this guy was going to randomly get $50,000 in one night?
Well, I guess because they knew he was, you know, Lonnie Lord. And because Lonnie Lord is the great big singer who sold 12 million records last year, that he had the disposable income to just, you know, be able to come up with that. Yeah, that was in the beginning when he's on the Hollywood Boulevard and he says he sold 12 million records last year.
Yeah, signing autographs.
To the three girls.
Yeah, his throngs of fans. There's three of them with those winged glasses.
Cat's eye glasses. They were delightful cat's eye glasses.
I like them. Right.
So there you go. Let's talk a little bit about the 60s fashions and objects and stuff. All the 60s tropes there.
60s life.
Right, right. Yeah. That was pretty darn cool, I thought. I mean, the vehicles were cool and the clothing was cool. What'd you think about that?
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it. Of course, I think it's hilarious how the women all have about 5 pairs of false eyelashes on each eye.
Right.
Sleep and bathe in a full face of makeup with their winged eyeliner.
Of course.
And their hair always done perfectly. It's delightful.
And may I just point out that I'm a big, big fan of mid-60s lingerie.
Oh, yes, the lingerie. That was something else.
Wow.
That was fun.
Okay, if we're going to talk about fashion or whatever, talk about the costumes.
Thing. Oh, yeah, there you go.
We got the women. They're, I mean, the ladies in our dress wonderfully.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to admit, there's some nice. Now, the guys, on the other hand, can't see. seem to find the right length of pants.
Yeah, I think
none
at one...
None of them pants.
I know. I think at one point I was talking about length and, you know, it's hard to take a guy too seriously who's got floods on.
Yeah, but I was just watching terribly played football.
Oh,
scene,
yeah.
Sorry.
Part of the music, first music video.
Yes, and even, what's the guy's name, Lonnie? He's got high waters on.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, clam diggers.
Golly, so they're like high-waisted and high, okay. Not
yeah.
My fat. Now he's got a gray hairstyle.
There you go. But yeah, this movie is kind of like a little time capsule for 1965, 1966.
Has your favorite car in it?
Oh yeah, that Thunderbird is gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. When you know when Just Jen gets all excited about vintage cars, this was my turn to get excited. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the costumes? Now that you brought it up.
Yes.
You know, I enjoyed the costumes. I mean, all the, are you talking about the superhero costumes?
Right,
or,
right.
Oh my God, that was great.
Describe those.
Okay, yes. So was it basically there's stuff that you can make yourself. Brett Fink himself has a ski mask on.
A creepy looking ski mask.
With one of the little balls on top.
Right, yeah. And then and Boo Boo has a, I don't know what he has. Like, I forgot what.
It's like a jester's hat.
Yeah.
That he rigged up so it has little blinking lights on it.
Yeah.
And just in the front, so it's almost like two horns. He's got knee pads on.
Right, and the shoes curl up too.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh my goodness!
And
it's a double-breasted shirt.
They have what looks like pajama tops with their initials sewn on, and then
they're like long johns.
Right. And then Rat Fink has his cape, his fabulous, wonderful cape, and
that he has to hold out.
Yeah. So they're going through the neighborhood riding on this wonderful, wonderful motorcycle with the sidecar.
BMW sidecar.
That's right. Standing in these cheaply made costumes. This is where the $20 went for the film.
Oh, I think there's also $20 spent, or some money to spend on that gorilla costume.
Oh, yeah. And there's the gorilla costume. Kogar the gorilla makes an appearance. For all of you who are there. And by the way, and I did not bring this and I could kick myself, but I was looking on YouTube and I found, somebody found some promotional video that were filmed that was shot at the time where they went to a local grocery store in costume in order to promote the film. And they're there, with the kids.
My God.
Yes, and it's adorable. And they're signing like autographs and giving away tickets. And it's in color, too, and it's adorable in their costumes.
Is it on YouTube?
And Kogar the gorilla's there, yes.
Oh, my God.
So you have to see that.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds awesome.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I would love to see this movie repackaged in Blu-ray with that, with the White Rabbit video, with some more of Ray Dennis Steckler stuff in there. There's all kinds of neat stuff going on.
I wonder who owns the rights to this movie.
You know, I have no idea. I know that he married again and actually had other daughters. I'm not sure if they were his or if they were from another marriage, but I met the one girl, the youngest one, briefly when she came to the video store to give him some stuff. And the feeling I got is that after he passed away, he probably left like 50 miles worth of stuff that he'd shot because he was actually in the post-production stages of putting out his final movie, which was basically, I think it's called Let's Do It Again, but it's basically Incredibly Strange Creatures Part 2.
Oh.
He was following up with that because the man was making movies up until the moment he died, pretty much. This is all he did. If he wasn't working directly on a project, then he was filming other stuff and just banking it. You know how Ed Wood would use all the stock footage? He never did that. He made his own stock footage. He had just reams and reams and reams of stuff that he shot. His kids grew up with almost their entire lives on film.
Oh,
all their friends are on film. Everything he did, every day, he was filming stuff.
Yeah.
He had all these short ends, which is what they used back then. You know, they would take the last... You know, it's 50, 60, 75 feet of film because they were cheap and nobody wanted them. And he would shoot stuff, and he would, because he was a really good photographer, and he had his Bolex. You could do that all day long, you know. So yeah, most of his movies you have to, they're all dubbed, and it's all done, you know, additional dialogue recording later on because of that.
And this one wasn't, since moving into sound and dubbing, this one wasn't dubbed too badly.
Not at all.
There were, okay, so I hated the voice for Rat Fink. Hey, oh, got on my nerves every single time. Oh, it was so horrible. But everything else sounded pretty good.
Right.
Especially Creepy Laugh Guy.
The Creepy Laugh Guy was good, but I
giggles.
I didn't like sometimes the dubbed voices that were obviously probably like Ray Dennis Steckler's voice.
Yeah.
And it sounded weird and
awkward.
Well,
the Prey one did sound really weird.
Right.
But
it's funny because, you know, even though Ron Haydock plays both characters, he plays Lonnie Lord and he plays Rat Fink, he's probably using his own natural voice for Lonnie Lord, but he decided to affect this sort of Bruce Wayne superhero kind of Dudley Do-Right-ish kind of voice.
Oh, it's horrible.
It's horrible, but I actually like it a lot too. You know, fight crime, boo boo. You know, when they say things, it's so super corny. It's just adorable.
Oh man.
Or what did you think of Boo Boo and Titus, basically?
Annoying as all hell. Absolutely annoying. That's when you said he had been in all these other things. I'm like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah.
That's okay. I'm Titus hoping Moody. He got better. Because, I mean, out of all the actors in this, I did not like him the most.
Aw.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Okay.
But yeah, he's like this mild-mannered gardener who's a little bit slow. He gets a hammer to the face when he tries to help out CB. But his personality changes somewhat. He's a lot more heroic with as Boo Boo. He's just not as effective. He's just as incompetent as he was, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Not a very good fighter.
Okay. I've got to tell you guys this. I just heard this. Okay. Ray Dennis Steckler tried to make a straight crime drama, but after he shot about 40 minutes of footage, he decided the film was simply not working. He couldn't afford to scrap the footage, and portions of the film were unintentionally funny. So he had two of the characters go into a room, then bust forth in makeshift costumes as Rat Fink and Boo Boo. He padded out the rest of the film with chase scenes, fight scenes, and even an encounter with a gorilla. He had a footage of the duo appearing in a genuine parade as if it were being held for their honor.
Right.
When the main title was being animated, the N and D were left off, so the title appears as Rat Fink a Boo Boo.
Awesome.
Yes, that's just great right there. But yeah, literally, it does feel like he shot 40 minutes of a crime drama and then go, what? Wait a minute, this isn't working. This, you know.
Wouldn't it be fun if?
Yeah, and then, but see, usually you do that in the writing, not when you've already shot 40 minutes of a movie.
Well, to be fair, I mean, sometimes things look one way in your head or on paper, and it's not until you're actually filming it or doing things with it that you're like, okay, this isn't really working out the way I thought it was going to work out. And, you know, we've already invested this much time, effort, and energy into it. Maybe I can scrap it if we do something completely different. And he was at least willing to give it a try. Like I said, he was filming stuff all the time anyway, so why not?
Yeah, it's just great. It's half the movie is a serious kind of creepy scenes.
They're all creepy scenes.
You know, especially with them stalking CB, like that stuff. With them calling, it's almost very, it's before
when
like
a stranger calls.
When a Stranger Calls and everything.
Right.
And actually, I guess When a Stranger Calls may watch this movie and the people made that and,
right.
and thought about doing that because
right.
it's very creepy.
And
but,
I like how the three villains are kind of given their thing, you know. So Link has his chain, and he doesn't just fight with the chain. He's playing with it all the time. He's rattling it.
He really likes
he's
that chain.
It. It's
twirling
like
it.
It's right. That prop is defining his character.
Well, and his big teeth.
And well, and the teeth too. I mean, you can't help that. And the same
he
thing.
Could've.
Same thing with Hammer. He's got his hammer. He's always using it. He hammers poor Titus. Mm-hmm. And that's his thing. Now I guess Giggles is just his giggly laugh.
Yeah.
Plus he's the one that's clearly been sipping way too much cappuccino. Because he's rattling off lines every 5 seconds. Come on, let's go, let's go. I'm bored. Let's do something. Let's go ball it up. Let's do this. Come on, come on, come on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that was fun. It was nice to see them defined like that. Kogar the gorilla, you know, that's just like a that's pure, that's right out of the Monkees. You could see that happening, a guy in a gorilla suit.
But that comes out of, again, nowhere.
Right.
So part of the plot that got to me, besides the fact that these, do we call them superheroes? These characters appear from nowhere is...
Bargain basement
heroes. Fight. And they get into a chase scene, and they fight, and that's it. Well, then they win, I guess.
Win.
Yeah.
Sort of win.
Yeah, but towards the end of this chase and the final fight scene, you have this very unique character who appears with interesting cowboy boots and a bowler hat.
Goodness, and very tight pants.
Very tight pants. Yeah, and he's looking for something, and you don't know what it is.
And he's got a leash. He's got a length of a leash.
Yeah, and you don't have a clue, and then that's...
Right. Jonathan was saying, I hope that's a dog. And I was like, I hope so too, because that just says unhealthy relationship.
I know. I thought it was a human.
I could totally see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought it was, because, you know, but see, that was pre, like, these days it might be like that.
Right.
But back then, I guess they weren't really, it wasn't really like that. Like, there would be more of an idea if there would be a pet.
Right.
Like a big pet or something, you know?
But even so, I think the guy was meant to be an oddball, because you could see he's like, Kogar, now you come here.
Yeah,
you know,
Kogar.
A very effective voice.
Oh, yes.
And I love how, you know, he's picked up CB and is running off, because that's what apes do. And the guy runs up to Ratfing and says, you tell your girl to bring back my ape.
That was a great line, because I was like, okay, why don't you tell your own ape to bring back the girl?
Then it's adorable, because then he runs after her, but and you think he's going to get in a big fight, a heroic fight like he just had, but instead he's like, imitating him and beating his chest, and then the ape just knocks him out.
If I recall, didn't he do that when he was like earlier in the movie?
Boo Boo did that.
Yeah.
Boo-Boo did that. Okay, so...
Remember, because you remember you laughed. He, all of a sudden, he goes, whoa! And then he runs, and he just flops right on the ground.
Oh, yeah, because he tried to, like...
Because
he tried to pile-drive the guy or whatever, or, like, do some kind of, like, thing. And he totally misses. I'm like, how do you miss that badly? But then it's Titus.
Right, and then the guy picks up his watch and stomps all over and gives it back to him and then punches him.
Oh, my God, that was crazy.
It was funny. The fisticuffs were fun. I mean, it's very different. I remember we saw the fisticuffs in... prehistoric bimbos and Armageddon City, where it just looked bad. This was
gentle
different.
Shoving.
Right. Yeah. Clearly missing by a mile. This was not professionally done either, but the tone of it was very different. It was a lot more comedic.
And it definitely did remind me of Batman.
Right.
So it's that kind of fight.
But this is almost just as bad as Double D Avenger style of fighting or whatever. That was just you haven't picked all three of those movies are your movies.
I know.
And so like you have not picked a movie where people can actually fight
or play sports.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with not catching a football. It's a stupid shape. Okay.
Oh, I know. Poor Carolyn Brand. It's just like there's just no way she was catching that football.
Is this a you thing, Jen? Are you not a good football catcher?
That's just stupid. Forget it. Let's talk about music. Next.
Music is a good topic.
Here's the thing about music. So, like I said, Ray Dennis Steckler worked for Fairway Pictures for Arch Hall Sr., who basically wanted to turn his son into the next Elvis. That's why on Mystery Science Theater they call him the Cabbage Patch Elvis, because he has that horrible bouffant hairstyle and he's pudgy face and his songs are terrible. So I think even though they had some of those musical moments in that film, I think Ray Dennis Steckler said, you know, if I'm going to do this, we have to make sure that this is a guy who's a real singer, mm-hmm. who can really play the music and actually has good songs. And I think he does that. I think all the songs, apart from the one slow one, that was a little much.
Yeah, that one,
the sad song. But all the other ones were fun.
It could be just the sad one just didn't fit in with that moment. Your girlfriend's been kidnapped. He's sad. Okay. I know, and you're sitting there not doing anything about
Boo-boo's it. Boo-boo's icing his lump with like 75 pounds of ice.
Well, Okay, I want to mention this because, like, you know, the first 40 minutes before it becomes this completely different thing, you know, I think that's where, that's exactly the point, the point where Ray Dennis Steckler is like, all right, I'm losing it. I'm not like interested in this right now. What can we do? Because right after they do that sad song, they go, you know what to do. You know, we're going, you know, he says something about, you know,
it's time for you know, and who.
Yeah, right after he gets the phone call asking for the money.
Right.
Yes, that's exactly.
Or demanding money, yeah.
Demanding money. But like that scene where they mm-hmm. get the, where he does a sad song, is right before he gets that call, you know, or
and
whatever.
What I love about that particular scene is, you know, poor Boo Boo's there icing his giant lump and is miserable. And he's like, you know, they have CB and they want the money and we can't get the money by then. What are we going to do? And then he says, it's time for you know and who. And he immediately hops up with this giant grin on his face like he's been waiting so long so he can turn into Boo Boo. Yeah. He's clearly very, very happy and pleased at the idea. Yeah.
Okay, but, so we were talking about music. Yeah. I'm sorry.
We were.
Yeah.
We
the got music was good.
The music was fun.
All the background music was good and fun and fit in very 60s.
Very 60s.
Oh, my goodness.
Ron Haydock, I'm not sure if that was the boppers or not in the barbecue by the pool scene, but they were the whitest band I've ever seen in my life. My God. And that's like, you know, Beach Boys white band right there.
Oh, yeah.
The music was great.
Pretty sure they might be the boppers.
I could very well be. I'm not sure.
They look like boppers to me.
Well, see, at that point, I'm not 100% certain that the band was together at that point.
Oh. Okay.
Not in 1966, because a lot of that music was done before that.
Okay.
So it could very well have been a house band or another band or just actors, for all I know. I don't really know.
Yeah, because you can't really, the music is dubbed over it, so you don't really even know if they're even playing that song or whatever. They could be looking like they're playing or whatever. It doesn't really matter.
And it's clearly that was a thing. Again, I bring up the Monkees because this was going on at the same time, and there was a made-up band where people were just playing around and, you know, somebody else did the music.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the thing. Only, like I said, in the case of the Monkees, they just kind of went all out zany, and there was no serious part, and, you know, it was hard to take any of that stuff seriously. But otherwise, I thought the soundtrack was cool. It was so good that I went out and bought it because I just thought it was so neat. And even the last one was really, really cool, where they're on the beach and mm-hmm. they have the comic book. They made that comic book prop, and then the guys are like, oh, my God, it's them. That was fun.
Well, you said you actually had some of his music, too, right? Yeah. Like, other than just the soundtrack, right?
Right.
You have some CDs of his.
Right. Well, there's one CD that I know of. I'm not sure if the others have ever been reissued. But it's like a kind of retrospective of Ron Haydock and the Boppers, and it's got all the songs that are on that soundtrack in that collection plus a few more. But I don't know that the actual records he put out. I mean, they're probably available. I haven't been able to find them, but I mean, I figure I've got the music that I want. So, but it was just really, really cool. And like I said, most of the time, you go to these movies in Mystery Science Theater or others, and the songs you have to sit through are usually terrible.
Yeah.
So this was kind of a big plus.
Yeah. Well, and I enjoyed the music throughout it. Like I said earlier, it fit. It was good. It was a heck of a lot better than some of the other movies I've had to sit through.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Right. I did want to bring up quickly that little story that Ray Dennis Steckler told me when I interviewed him back in 2009 about Coleman Francis. For those of you who remember, Coleman Francis is the director and actor who did Beast of Yucca Flats and Skydivers and Red Zone Cuba, all three of which were featured on Mystery Science Theater 3000. He did a lot of stuff with his producer friend Tony Cardoza, who knew Ed Wood. And there's a lot of Ed Wood connections there, even though they didn't quite work together directly. Mm-hmm. The thing about Coleman Francis is that he had a really, really bad alcohol problem. He was a serious alcoholic. And In 1969, Ray Dennis Steckler was in the middle of making his film called Body Heat, and Body Fever. Body Heat's a different movie. And he's walking along Hollywood Boulevard, and there is Coleman Francis, drunk as a skunk, passed out in the gutter, literally, having just been rolled. His pockets are pulled out, and he's got half a bottle of booze with him, and he's all but dead. And, you know, even though he didn't have much money to his name, he wanted to make sure that this guy had, you know, a little bit of dignity and some money in his pocket. And so he convinced him. He said, come at my place and meet me here tomorrow at such and such time. And he went back and he wrote him in a new character for that movie, just to give him some money and give him some dignity back. And that just goes to show you the kind of guy that Ray Dennis Steckler was. He was very family oriented. He would do anything for his family, and his family extended to all of his friends and anybody that helped him make these movies. And it's just a really cool thing. And I remember when I was talking to him, and he would always get people saying, you know, by the time he was, you know, practically poor and having to mortgage his house several times to make these movies, they're like, you know, why do you keep on doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, especially in the 80s and 90s, you know, people have forgotten you. At least the Hollywood establishment has forgotten you. And he said, you know, people like you come to my video store all the time, and they say, I love Ratfink and Boo Boo, or I love Incredibly Strange Creatures. This is great. This is the stuff that makes me keep making movies, because the fact that there are still people that come to me and say that they were touched by these things, and it makes me keep wanting to do stuff. So I just like that about him. I just thought that was fabulous. You know, he found his niche in life that he wants to do, and he did it up to the very, very end.
It kind of proves that you don't have to become Hollywood famous.
Right.
To still do what you enjoy and have a good life.
Exactly.
You don't need all the fame. It sounds like, having not met him or really know anything about him, but it just sounds like he found contentment in his life. He had enough money. He could make his movies. People enjoyed it. People still chatted and talked to him, talked about him, all that. And,
right.
Yeah.
He ended up being a assistant professor, I think, at one of I think it was like the University of Las Vegas, where he taught film.
Oh,
so he kind of taught film history for a while. He did that for a while. He trained two very, very important cinematographers, and he was respected for his talents, if not for the products that he put out, other than people like myself who love cult films or love bad films. And I wouldn't necessarily call this a bad film. It's very cheaply made, of course, but I wouldn't call this a bad film. This is more of a guilty pleasure, cultish kind of a film, you know? Yeah, I enjoyed it. And again, almost to a person, everyone I've introduced this movie to who's never seen it or heard from it before has enjoyed it. And usually they say the same things too. They're like, okay, I thought this movie was going to be something completely different until it completely changed.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
Yeah. Apparently, I looked it up. Apparently, the originally planned, the film was a straight crime drama titled The Depraved, was the original title of it before it became Brad Fink and Boo Boo. Inspired by Steckler's ex-wife, Carolyn, who had been a victim of a series of obscene phone calls.
That's right. I remember
so
that.
Basically, you know, this whole idea came from
Art Imitates Life.
That, and then he suddenly decided to change it to a straight parody of Batman, which is great, you know, because you get, you know, it's kind of almost like From Dusk Till Dawn. In a way, like, it predates, obviously, From Dusk Till Dawn, but, like, From Dusk Till Dawn starts as a crime drama that becomes, like, a vampire movie and stuff like that. I've seen a lot of these mashup movies. You know, recently I watched one and I thought it was horrible. It was like Last House on the Left meets Zombies, you know, and I was just like, this is not that good.
Last Zombie on the Left?
Yeah, basically, you know, and it just wasn't... It happened, like, at the end of the movie, you know, not in the middle. This at least was in the middle, so we're like, whoa. My biggest problem with this movie is, like, Yeah, there is about 20 minutes of a chase scene that just kind of goes on. Like,
right.
A whole third of the movie.
Yeah. It kind of, you know, in a way it kind of kills down the vibe because after, you know, you're really, you know, action-packed. There's even a scene where the, was the mud flies up, and you mentioned this, it gets in his cape, and he cleans off his cape while he's, you know, like, I mean, we don't need to see that.
And I love how they stop at the stop sign, and they make sure to look both ways.
Always look both ways before crossing a street.
Yogi Bear! I swear to God! The Yogi Bear, that is such a Yogi. Was he writing for, like, a Yogi thing, and then he just put it in here?
I can tell you that from what he told me at the time, that the whole Rat Fink Boo Boo thing was something that, you know, originally people know that the film, the lab guy blew the title, but that rather than he didn't want to necessarily spend the money for it, that he just kind of liked it and just left it alone.
Right.
So that's what he says.
But no, but the name Boo Boo is obviously from Yogi Bear originally anyway. Mm-hmm. So when he does, you know, when he did that, when he said,
god-awful voice.
Look, but he was trying to imitate Yogi Bear, I'm thinking.
Odds are.
Because Yogi Bear has that very, like, deep voice.
And it's horrible.
And it's annoying, yes, I understand.
Unless you're a cartoon bear.
And yeah, if you're a cartoon bear, you can get away with it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But if you're a guy dressed up in a ski mask
in a $5 costume,
yeah, you don't want to sound like Yogi Bear.
No,
you know.
But and be sort of like the all American Boy Scout, you know, too at the same time. But see, look at his face. He's like, oh boy, I get to be Boo Boo again.
Yeah. Well, I've always wondered. Like, I was wondering once we see Rat Fink and Boo Boo, like. Are these, like, normal crime fighters? And because at the end of the movie, she didn't realize that that Rat Fink was actually her boyfriend. Right, right. So, like, is this the introduction to them? Or have they done this before?
I get the feeling, yeah, because remember he says,
we only have one weakness.
What's that, Rat Fink?
Bullets.
Right. Now he's doing the voice, so it's probably annoying you some more.
That's okay. I'm used to you too.
But no, it's just kind of, it's kind of annoying, but it's also like, why would he do this? Like, why would they keep doing this, especially if they're not the greatest crime fighters.
No, they're not.
In the world.
No, they're not. They've got heart and they try. They're just not very good.
I love that the cop at the end of the thing, you know, the parade, basically gives him, like, a smile, like, knowing that, you know, they're there trying to solve crime. But really, he was probably just smiling at the camera,
right.
Like, hey, I'm being videotaped.
So, another little fun bit of trivia for those of you who, again, are big Misty fans. All of this is happening around the same time that Jerry Warren is making his film. He makes Wild Wild World of Batwoman. Now, even though this is a Batman parody, Jerry Warren is the one who gets sued by the people who make Batman because of the word Batman, Ratwoman in the title. He's got to change his film to She Was a Hippie Vampire, that ridiculous title, and he had to pull it from the theaters. He had to resubmit it, and he added on that scene in the beginning, that first minute and a half, where they're initiating the new member, and she thinks that she's drinking blood, but it turns out she's drinking flavored yogurt, which is so ridiculous. And then she's like, oh, you know, we're not real vampires. She goes, oh no, vampires went out in the Middle Ages, and we just drink synthetic stuff, which is so stupid, because, well, then you're not even a real vampire. Why even bother having the whole vampire thing? Well, it's because he got sued. And as a matter of fact, he ended up losing money for it, and Jerry Warren, pretty much, that was it for a long time, until he came back in the mid-70s with Frankenstein Island, which we're going to do at some point because it's horrible. But at the same time this is happening, Ray Dennis Deckler's people, I think it was Dennis Morgan, calls them up and says, hey, you stole the name of our villain, Rat Fink, because in Wild Wild World of Batwoman, Rat Fink is the villain there. And he's like, we had that. So he kind of got it from that end too, which was, I thought, pretty interesting. So there's this really weird thing going on at the time with these
everybody wants to sue everybody.
So right, right.
Kind of like, well, now.
It's, well, that plus there's this whole cross-fertilization of thing that's going on with independent directors in that area at that time. Because if you compare the two movies together, they're both kind of wacky and crazy and sort of doing their own thing. And there's a lot of similarities going on. It's just that Jerry Warren doesn't have quite the handle on talent that Ray Dennis Steckler does.
Right.
So yeah, for those of you who are big Misty fans, you might find that very interesting. So there's a lot of fun stuff going on there, and that's why I've always wanted to make that thing on the internet, the Stinkopedia, where everything kind of gets connected in that whole world. It's it's slowly fading away, and the people who were there, a lot of them are no longer there. And for those of us who are into that sort of thing, I think it would be kind of a fun little project to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Get on it.
Yeah, among all the other projects that I have to deal with. But yeah, so I just thought that this was kind of a fun thing. You know, we were... In our season, we started to really sort of tail down into sort of the bad stuff and really hitting rock bottom with Fateful Findings. Uh-huh. So I remember you kind of begged us to sort of do something a little bit more fun.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely.
So I figured it was time to dust off Rat Fink a Boo Boo, because at the very least, there's a lot of fun, and it's just
a lot of fun
silly.
And bad parking.
A lot of bad parking.
Oh, they park like the people at my complex. You know, the one who parks next to me, half in my spot, like a moron.
Rare.
You know who you are.
I'm sure he's listening to this podcast right now.
Right
now. Do it again. I'll have him towed.
There you go. Well, just call Rat Fink and Boo Boo on them. They will fight crime.
They will drive up in their motorcycle with the sidecar, and they will start punching.
And remember, they're building bodies, better bodies, 8 ways.
What did that? Yes, at the very end, building bodies, better
bodies, 8 ways. I have no idea what that was.
It was this weird, random throwaway line. I don't know.
I imagine there was something at the time that's referring to, but we're here in 2018.
You
we
keep
have no
telling
idea.
Yourself that.
But yeah, remember, this is a nice tidy little time capsule of 1965, 1966. So who the heck knows? But remember, hot dogs were 23 cents.
Yep.
And I think I saw the at the parade, they went by a gas station. It was 39 cents a gallon.
Wow.
How about that?
Nice.
Yeah, I would love for it to get back to that, but I doubt that would.
That's not happening.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
So what did you think of Carolyn Brandt, Jonathan?
Oh, me? First, I thought she was wonderful. Like, she did a great job. I guess, was she Ray Dennis Steckler's girlfriend at the time, or was she?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then they got married.
Then they got divorced.
Later on.
Yeah. So, she was wonderful. I mean, I didn't think anything bad about her. The only problem I have with her is she's kind of, like, she's just the damsel in distress most of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
She's either getting these nasty phone calls or she's getting picked up by these guys or whatever.
She's the victim.
Yeah.
And she keeps trying. Like, at least she does the one thing that I always complain about, which is, like, when somebody gets put into a car, why don't they just try to leave out the other door?
Right, she does
that
twice.
She tries it. She tries it, at least.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, that was something that I don't know if she did herself or Ray told her to do that, you know, if that was, like, in the script to do, which I wonder if there really was a script in this movie. I feel like a lot of it's improv. But
at least the first half, I'm sure there was.
Yeah.
But yeah, she does kind of like things that you would think a normal, smart, intelligent person would do. I love how she's kicking them in the shins whenever they try to drag her somewhere. She's trying, you know. She hasn't completely given up, although she does faint, you know.
She faints at the gorilla.
Yeah.
See, that one was a little more ridiculous. You know, she's running around in heels, so I don't give points for that. But yeah, after all this, she's just standing around. She's kicking. She may be screaming. We just can't hear her. You know, she's doing some minor stuff. And then at that point, she sees the gorilla and faints.
Right.
At the very end. There's plenty of other times to faint beforehand.
Well, he is a big, hairy, smelly gorilla.
How do you know he's smelly?
You're saying he wouldn't faint?
No. No, I think that would be a good time to run.
Oh, yeah, run. Yeah, run. And she could have kicked him in the shins. Now, that what I would have loved to see. Like, kicked him in the shins and then run off. Because
I know that when he picks her up and starts carrying her off, she's kind of lightly tapping his shoulders.
Yeah, she does wake up pretty quickly.
She does. She does. Yeah. What did you think of Carolyn Brandt?
I guess she was good.
Well, as compared to, say, some of the actresses or characters in some of the other movies, like in Fateful Findings or...
Well, like I said earlier, out of all the actors on here, the only one that really struck me as bad and annoying is the Titus guy, which I guess his real name is Titus as well.
Right.
I did not like him, but I thought all the other actors did a good job.
Titus Moody, by the way, just pointing that out.
We're not related.
We could reshoot this. I could be Red Fink. You could be Boo Boo. You could be CB. I'm telling you, we can completely do this right now.
I don't think Ray Dennis Stickler's family would like that.
Oh, they would love it. They would. Ray Dennis himself would love it.
No.
You'd get to
I'd
wear
not
those.
Not see you guys run around in long johns and speedos. It's not happening.
But you get to wear those really cool 60s, mid-60s fashions.
Not happening.
Come on, you want those cat glasses. You know that.
Oh, I do want the cat glasses. Yeah, my eyeliner is just not as good as theirs. But I still don't want to see the two of you run around in capes and goofy masks. And
oh, I totally want to do that. You realize
and
that.
I know that.
And ski masks.
We could actually make that. We could make that tonight. I mean, it's just funny.
Nope.
Nope. Not
happening. I'm even agreeing on that. I'm not being Titus.
Oh.
You know? I'm not even being... I don't even want to be Rat Fink.
I do.
That's the worst, like, superhero name ever. Rat Fink. Like, I know it was, like, one of the songs in the movie. It's like, you as a Rat Fink is what it was called.
You
as a Rat Fink. And, like, it's so, like, okay, so they took that song, and they're like, make it cool. You know, could call the movie Rat Fink, you know, and have the character be called Rat Fink.
And by the way, that is Fink with a P-F-I-N-K.
P-H, I thought.
No. P-F.
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 Yeah.
Puffink.
Puffink.
Puffink. There you go.
Rat Fink. Oh, my God.
Rat Puffink. So, yeah, but just imagine, Jerry Warren ripped off the name. It's just a lot of fun, and...
He tried to sue Ray Dennis Stekler?
No, Ray Dennis Stekler's people reached out to him. But by then, from what I understand, the movie had already been pulled because of the Batman folks who said that you can't use that in the title because of Batwoman, because Batwoman is part of the Batman world, and, you know, we didn't give you a license to do that. So, it's just that Ray Dennis Stekler's people were sort of like the mosquito, where the Batman people were like the big gorilla. It was getting pulled in anyway. From what I understand, there are other references to other characters in other movies called Rat Fink. But I haven't had the time to dig all that up or track all of that down. But it wouldn't surprise me. Maybe it was just a 1965 or 1966 thing.
Yeah.
Hard to say. I do know that, some of these guys, Titus ended up, sadly, he was hitchhiking to get to Las Vegas to be in another one of Ray Dennis Stekler's movie, and he got hit by a truck and died, in the early 70s. So he's gone. I believe James Bowie is also gone. And some of the other folks. I think Link, George Caldwell, is still around, and I'm fairly certain that Carolyn Brandt is around, but I have yet to be able to locate her. I would give my eye teeth, like I say, to interview her. I just think, and it's not just me, there are a lot of Ray Dennis Stekler fans out there. I do have two of the movie or two of the DVDs that Ray Dennis Stuckler put out. One is called A Tribute to Carolyn Brandt, and then the other one is sort of a it's another sort of tribute, but it's just got a different title. But they're both pretty interesting. You know, she started off as a dancer. That was her thing. That's what got her into Hollywood. I think she ended up trying out for a movie, and then he was involved with it somehow. I think it may have even been Wild Guitar. And then, you know, obviously she's was somebody that he wanted to get involved with. So she put her in and as the, one of the dancers in Incredibly Strange Creatures, and it all just kind of blossomed from there. So after Ratfinger Boo Boo, before that there was Incredibly Strange Creatures at 63, Thrill Killers in 64. This one was in 66. Lemon Grove Kids is the one he did next, which is kind of an odd sort of creation of two or three short films put together. And it's kind of a weird, strange kind of collection. He also did a short film. I can't remember the name of it, but it was kind of like an homage to the Bowery Boys and Hunts Hall and that kind of whole thing. And it's silent. And other than there's music, and then there's all those kind of weird boops and bonks and strange noises. Yeah. And he's just goofs on the loose or something like that. I forget what it's called. Something like that. And basically, Ray Dennis Stuckler is playing the Hunts Hall character with the hat with the brim pulled up and, you know, doing the old Bowery Boys routine. He ends up working together up until 71, where it was Blood Shack, which at some point we may have to do as well. Some people call it the Chooper because it's supposed to have been the Chopper, but there's another instance where a word was incorrectly said, and rather than changing it, they left it the Chooper instead of the Chopper.
The Chooper.
Yes. Carolyn Brandt's in there too, and his daughters are in there too. But it's funny because when it was originally done, the distributor thought that it was too short, and so they made him take it back and re-edit it by putting it in the stock footage. So he puts in like 15 minutes of his kids going to this little rodeo in the middle of nowhere and sort of filming them. And they get a pony for their birthday named Peanuts. And so he films that because he films everything, and he puts that in there. And then they ended up putting it out. It's just an interesting, weird kind of a thing. The sad thing is like I said, in order to make money later on, after he ends up divorcing Carolyn Brandt, is he ends up getting into these really weird kind of adult films. And he goes by like Sven Christensen and a few other different Cindy Lou Stutters. He tries to kind of disguise his name.
Yeah.
But there's some really crazy, weird stuff that's out there. And I'm trying to get my hands on some of it because some of it is, you know, very much like Ed Wood. You know how Ed Wood ended up doing a lot of adult stuff too, but he couldn't help himself. He had to put some kind of weird horror elements in there, like in Orgy of the Dead. He's got to put the Wolfman and the Mummy in there for really no reason. And Criswell, well, he's the same way. I mean, I guess the guys who had to sort of do that, who had to transition, still wanted to make real legit movies. They didn't really want to have to do the adult stuff, but they had to put bread on the table. So they tried to compromise as best they can by still putting in the elements of the movies that they liked making. And the effect, of course, is just very strange and bizarre because basically when you're making an adult film, you want the adult stuff and you don't care about the other things. The early adult films from that period, the 60s and early 70s, are kind of odd, strange little movies. And some of them are really bizarre. And it's because of that, because the people who were making them used to make independent films because they kind of had to. I could end up going ad nauseum about Ray Dennis Stuckler and all his films. I'm a big, big fan.
I noticed.
Hide
it.
Where Jonathan is a big fan of Ed Wood, and I like Ed Wood too. Ray Dennis Stuckler is kind of my guy.
Your guy.
You know, I just love every one of his films, and he's very, very marvelous. And we'll get to another one of his films at some point, hopefully season two.
All right. Well, I guess that means it is time for our ranking.
Yay.
Explain the ranking system.
Okay, so basically we are saying, as far as the stinkometer goes, The stinkier the movie is, the higher the score. So if you've got a 1, it's not particularly stinky. If you've got a 10, you're in Neil Breen territory and you may as well kill yourself.
So, we do not encourage suicide.
We do not endorse suicide.
No, you may want to look for another occupation. Creative outlet.
Yeah. And Neil Breen makes you come close. But, I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, I'm going to probably give it a 2, to be honest.
Well,
you want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say 3. Okay. I would give it a 3.
I was kind of aiming in between the two of y'all.
Okay.
Because, it's well filmed. You can definitely tell that he was a photographer.
Right.
There's some beautiful shots. It has a, has a story. It's just the jarring change, and those costumes are horrible.
I know.
And they don't run very well. I'm just noticing that. They kind of run goofy. But, yeah, it was enjoyable. It was funny.
Yeah.
Which, so you're saying 2.5?
Slow-mo in this. It's that random dramatic section where it's... Okay, why that part, though?
I don't know.
It's a random running scene.
Believe me, if Ray Dennis Decker were alive, I'd be happy to interview him and do a scene-by-scene analysis with him.
He might do it in the... Have you listened to the commentary?
Not for a long time, but it's something I would want to do.
So, yes. To answer your question, I was going to 2.5.
2.5. So, 2, 3, and a 2.5. That's pretty good.
I mean, it's a pretty fun movie.
Oh, yeah.
If the chase scene had been cut down... See, the problem is the movie's already too short, as is. It's like... I think it was less than an hour and 10 minutes. Back then, that was fine. Nowadays, films have to be about 80 minutes long at least.
Right.
Sometimes 70, 70 is okay, but nothing lower than 70. But this movie and like Leonard Glendale was about like 60 minutes, and stuff. And so if you got at least like an hour long of a movie, it was a feature still, or whatever. So, I mean, but they could have cut like some of that stuff down a little bit and it still would have been fine. Like if they cut, they didn't, I'm sorry. It was funny, but they did not need him saying, you should always look both ways before crossing the street, boo-boo. Yeah. I just thought that was just like, okay.
Very Batman-esque. Yeah, Batman's or, got a few or things
super,
like that.
Super Boy Scoutish.
Yes, yeah.
Like, he stops, they stop at the stop sign, and then they actually still catch up to the guys. It makes absolutely no sense. Like, I mean, as the people's cars, like, slower than the,
Well, you could say anything about Boo Boo, he's at least a good motorcyclist. Give him that much.
Maybe, I guess, if you want to call it that.
I don't know about that.
Well... Still, like I said, because we were spiraling towards the bottom in this season, I thought it was time to sort of inject something a little higher.
I think you did a good job picking this a movie that was enjoyable, and silly, but also, has its moments of like seriousness and especially in the beginning, there's a lot of seriousness and everything. The obscene phone calls and all that stuff was kind of scary and creepy and.
That was well done. That was quite creepy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I enjoyed that. But, and then it gets off into the silly, like, Kogar and everything like that. It's just like, okay, what is going on here? What are they doing? But it's fun. And out of all the movies that we've done, this is probably... one of the most fun.
Yeah. Well, that's why I picked it, and that's why I wanted to make sure that it was brought up on Indie Film Cafe, because I think a lot of people would enjoy it, and, definitely go out and find it. I'm pretty sure you can get it on Amazon. There are definitely copies out there, and I think people should, discover it. I think it's a lot of fun, and, very good stuff. I wish Ray Dennis Decker was still alive. I think he'd be very pleased that people are still talking about this film that he made.
Right, and that's the beauty of like podcasts and video of YouTube and stuff, is that people will, like, come back and see these movies.
Right.
As long as they're still available to for people to see, as long as there are DVDs and everything still out there, people are going to come watch this, you
right.
know?
Right.
The sad thing will be if like, things like this start going away or something, you know?
Right.
And people aren't reissuing these, and they're just, you know, that will be sad, mm-hmm. you know? But,
Yeah, as far as, I don't know if this movie is in the public domain. I actually have no idea. I don't think it is, but it may be, in which case, you know, who knows, maybe it'll go on forever. But I just hate to see it because I'd like to see his family, you know, get the money that he deserves. I'm sure he was in a position where he wishes he could have, you know, had a lot more money to deal with making his films, but also make sure his family had enough money to do what they had to do. It's, you know, it's a tough situation to be in where you have to sacrifice the one for the other. But, you know, at least the brief moment I had with his daughter, he didn't seem to have any problems with it. So
yeah, they probably enjoyed being, especially being a part of it. You said that, like, his daughter was in one of the scenes and stuff like that. I mean, they, you know, it seems like they were a family of creative people mm-hmm. who enjoyed being a part of it.
I would love to dig up the daughters and interview them sometimes. I think that would be fun.
That sounded wrong. Dig up the daughters.
Well, you know.
They're dead.
Yeah.
No.
Sounds like you're going to dig up their corpses and...
Well, they're probably my age. They're probably, you know, late 40s, early dead. 50s.
Ouch.
Boo. Well, Connie Newmark, we didn't need you too much this time.
I don't think we... I mean, other than the shift of the tone of it, you know, or whatever, that's a little bit of a continuity thing, I think. Like, I just think it's just strange. But other than that, I don't think there was any continuity issues that I noticed.
Well, like I said, he grew up... You know, he started off in the Hollywood industry, and they would have taken that stuff very seriously, especially if he's working with Alfred Hitchcock, you would think. And I thought you would have loved that story because I know you're a Hitchcock fan too.
Oh, I know. And I'm like worried that hearing that somebody almost tried to kill Hitchcock.
Well, he didn't try, dude.
I mean, almost killed Hitchcock. Okay, he didn't try, but he almost killed the master.
Wow. Oh. And then, like, the big fat diva that he is like, get that guy fired.
I'm sorry, somebody tried to accidentally kill me. I would have been like, that guy's not doing that job anymore. Yeah, I'm sorry.
If it hadn't been for that, if it hadn't been for Alfred Hitchcock, Rat Finka Boo Boo might never have been made. So think about it that way.
I mean, I'm happy that he got fired from that movie, but, you know, I'm not happy they tried to kill him. Or he almost, whatever. Anyway, moving on.
All right, so I think it's time to wrap it up. Yeah, there you go. Rat Finka Boo Boo.
All right, so let's tell everybody where they can reach us, Indie Film Cafe. At Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Also, we are available on Podbean, Stitcher, Radio Public, Apple iTunes. I think that's it on that. You can reach me, Jonathan A. Moody, on Facebook. On Instagram, Jonathan A. Moody Film.
IndieReviews.com, IndieFilmCafe.reviews.
IndieFilmCafe.reviews, SickFlickProductions.com, and I think on Twitter it's just at Jonathan Moody.
Mm-hmm.
So, Paul, how about you? How can people reach you?
Well, either through Facebook or, you know, any of the other outlets. I mean, we have email for all of that. So.
Well, you have a Twitter and you have an Instagram account.
I have.
You don't use them.
I don't really use them much, to be honest. I have to do that more. Probably
tagging you and things.
I know. Facebook is probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Yeah.
I'm on the Facebook all the time.
And on the Facebook. Jen, you have a Instagram account that is public for people to check out.
Yeah, it's the cooking and vintage stuff.
What's that?
Jen cooks that.
Jen cooks that. There you go. So if you want to see what she's cooking, you know.
And you do.
And you do, because she's always cooking something.
Good stuff. There's been a few bombs, but mostly good stuff. A lot of stuff from the 40s mm-hmm. and 50s.
Nice.
Yep.
Also, Sick Flick Productions has a few podcasts out there as well, all about acting podcast, Frights the Roundtable 2.0. Let's see.
We're going to be doing Forgotten Horror Classics in November, so that'll be nice. It'll be interesting to actually do some good films that have also been sort of buried over time and sort of reintroduce those to the people, too. Instead of stinkers, to do something that's really good and just has been forgotten over time. It happens.
And we're also still doing, I believe we're still doing Film Freaks at some point.
Right,
When we get a chance to
We did the initial episode. We're still trying to figure out the next one.
Yeah, we did the movie Ed Wood. We talked about that. I think the next one I want to do, if I can, is Halloween, since that's a big, you know, the new one's coming out. And there's the it's the 40th anniversary. So if we can do that at some point, that would be great. But yeah, that's I think that's about it.
That's about it.
I know there's Hollywood Boulevard podcast still going. Alfred's still doing that, and I was gonna do an episode soon where we talk about Friday the 13th. So the series, you know, the film series. So
that's about it.
That's about it.
All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us, and we will see everybody on the flip side.
Oh dear.
Bye.
Hello?
Are you C.B. Beaumont?
Yes, I am. And who are you, and why did you hang up on me before?
I must talk to C.B. Beaumont.
Well, you are talking to her.